And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to understand. Restore the Republic. We're losing our freedom in the land. Working from behind the scenes, controlling everything, from the daily news we read to the politicians. And they're pulling our financial strings, more powerful than kings. It's the central bank elite bringing our destruction. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to make a stand. Restore the Republic. We are the people and we can. Restore the Republic. Pledge our allegiance to the flag. Restore the Republic. We gotta take the freedom back. America, arise. It's time to open up our eyes and march back down the road to freedom. If we look the other way, they'll take our rights away. So we the people must seek freedom. Restore the Republic. Shoving taxes down our throats, bailing out banks we don't even owe. It's a ruination. They're invading our privacy with high technology, microchip in our ID. It's abomination. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to make a stand. Restore the Republic. Spread the news across the land. Restore the Republic.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is time to restore the Republic, to take our freedoms back. It is March the 15th, 2012. I believe we are in week 35. I don't see it on my little piece here. If you're like me, you've had email challenges if you've got a Republic address, and mine still is not up. So for some odd reason, I get it on my cell phone, but not on my computer. Good evening, everyone. These are exciting times. You know, we started out this year recognizing that we are hitting the ground running, and we truly are. Lots of things are going on. Just a very exciting time to be alive. Very exciting time to watch the changes happen in our nation. Very exciting time to recognize that God has His hand firmly upon this republic, and that He's working His purposes through us and in us. And that just excites me to wake up every day to see what it is that I'm called to participate in. So on that note, Janine, I want to do a sound check. Is this coming across well?
Robert, you're doing fine, and I just wanted to let you know this is week 36.
Week 36. Oh, sorry about that. Well, we're in week 36. Let it not be said that we got it wrong yet again. Oh, it's been a day of people pointing out my errors. That's wonderful. So I would like to call on Bruce Dietler, but I saw him and I don't see him anymore. So Janine,
I will
there
go
he is.
Look
I,
for him.
I got him. I got him.
Oh,
here
you did?
Go.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, Brother Bruce, I'm inviting you to open us with a word of prayer and a thought you might have for this evening.
My pleasure and my joy.
Bruce, can I get you to just speak into your phone just a little bit more?
I will do that.
There you go. Thanks.
My pleasure and my joy to lift up prayers unto the Lord, from whence cometh our hope and our help and all good things. Father, we thank you that you are the source of all good things. Father God, you've given to this republic all sorts of good gifts in the people, Father, that you have placed with us and among us. Father, we thank you that your glory and your anointing is upon each one to perform your will and your work in your way, Father God, to bring forth this republic. We thank you for the opportunity to come together tonight, Father God, in fellowship. Father, we thank you for that which will be brought forth. We ask you to direct our hearts, direct our minds, that we would open our hearts to receive what you have, that we would be able to hit the ground running and accomplish all of your will with excellence, Father, for that is your heart, and that is our joy, and that is our passion. We thank you for that. We rest in your love and faithfulness. We give you the glory and the praise for all you've done, are doing, and yet shall do in and through your republic. In the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Bruce. Very good. You know, we've watched a few things happen over the course of the last couple of years. And something that I brought up a couple of weeks ago on the roundtable call was the idea of having transparency and hearing what actually goes on in the halls of Congress so that the body politic can have confidence. And I would add to that excitement that our representatives are really about the people's business, have a heart for the founding principles, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights undergird by the Bible. And so one of our subcommittees decided to take it upon themselves to experiment with that process and gave me the opportunity to audit their call I think it was last week. And for technical reasons, they were not able to bring that to the table. But we are going to have that experience on the call of what it's like to be in the gallery on the roundtable call tonight. So we're going to start with the president, however. He wants to bring us some updates about the budgets and things. And it's going to be very exciting for me to see that, you know, technology being as it is, we've wondered what's taken us so long about getting our discussions in an open manner for folks to hear. And so we're going to hear about that with the Ranger program tonight. And we're going to address some of your questions. Something I'm noticing, and maybe you guys are too, the closer we get to the goal of having all our states seated, the goal of having funding so we can really get to work, the goal of really getting on the runway so that the wheels are starting to lift off the pavement, it seems to me like we have issues that come up that we have to face front on, just absolutely front on, and to let the chips fall where they're supposed to fall. Tonight on my way home, I got a voicemail when I hadn't returned for about a week. Somebody had referred a new person to me from one of the from another state, and we got into talking, and they were wanting to, you know, justify where we're coming from, what our point of view is, whether they can trust that our message is real and authentic. And so we went through, you know, a number of backwards and forwards, and finally this gentleman said, look, just let me be blunt, something I have to really talk about here. I was raised as a Jew, and I found Islam. And it's a powerful part of my life, and I just want to know and have your assurance that, you know, I can bring to the table, you know, who I am and what I have. And so it was a very interesting conversation, and I said, hey, I'll just be really straight with you. As far as you have an agenda for Sharia law, it's sure not going to happen on my watch. And he says, no, I'm not saying that. And I said, you know, the truth is that all of us, no matter who you are and what you believe, whether you believe in the Bible, whether you believe in a New Age teaching, whether you believe in spaceships, whether you believe in Judaism, whether you believe in Islam, that's not the point. America is a land of the free, and you're allowed those, all of us, to champion, to find God however you find him meaningful to be. The comment I wanted to bring to the table was, we just had a real straight, in-your-face conversation about it, and I said, you know, it isn't about your agenda. The truth is, you're going to impact the people around you by your heart, by the quality of what you speak, by your character and your actions. You can have whatever words you like, but it's really about the caliber of yourself as a person, whether people are going to listen to you, whether they're going to follow you, whether they're going to come alongside you. So we both left the call feeling that we respected each other's point of view and could quite easily work together respecting our differences. So I say that to say that that's just one issue. There's 1,000 issues. Funding is going to be the next one that comes up about what the right approach is to funding. And I just like to encourage all of us to hear one another, respect one another, and grow from the exchanges we have as we come into this time of great tension. As the pieces are starting to birth now and starting to really take shape, they're authentic, they're true, they're lasting. I just like to encourage us to dig deep in our character, to be the best we can be, and respect and trust that others are also doing the same. All right, that was my platform tonight. President Tim Turner, I'm delighted to see you're on the call. Janine tells me that you have some reports to bring to us with regards to budgeting. So good evening, sir.
Robert and Janine, thank you for inviting me on the call tonight. We always appreciate an opportunity to bring information to the people and update them on what's going on in the Republic. I'm excited about what I see going on in the country as well as out of the country right now. A lot of good things happening for us on our behalf. God is truly in charge, and he is he's making the way, and he's making things happen for us. And very thankful for his blessings that he's given us. Tough year for us, know that, and a lot of us are hanging on by tooth and toenail, as they say. But, you know, we're still hanging on, and it's only by the grace of God that all of us, I look back today, and we were talking about that today, you know, it was just a few months ago, I said, how in the world are we going to keep on holding on for any length of time? And yet here it is months later, and we're still holding on. And God has provided it every step of the way in a miraculous way. And it's been awesome to watch him at work. When we have exhausted everything, we are only beginning because he's got plenty. And he always supplies the need as time goes on. And he is about to supply our needs in a great and a mighty way. There's been some issues about the budget. I was told there was a bit of confusion going on today about the budget call on the things that were talked about on Monday night. This was, I thought, a very relatively simple issue. I asked the Congress for the sake of time, I asked Congress to the committee to bring a bill to Congress to appropriate emergency funding for our startup capital that we would need to get everything started for the first 3 months, probably, of the budget year, so that once the funding was in hand and Congress approves it, we wouldn't have to go through that process and delay that appropriation of the funds for a period of time. And that's what the bill was intended to do. It seems there was a little confusion about the purpose of the bill and what the bill was intending to do. But I think everybody's pretty well on the same page now, and they understand it was like the first 90 days of the budget that we were going to appropriate now so that we wouldn't have to delay it when we actually have it in our hands. And that's awesome. That's what the purpose of it was, and I think that everybody is pretty well on board and understands what we were trying to do. Because we don't want to have the funding sitting in a bank and then all of a sudden we realize we've not appropriated it. It hasn't been brought to the Congress and approved in a bill form like we're required to do in order to appropriate funds. We have to do something to be able to use the funds in our constitutional government, and by bringing bills to the Congress and explaining what we intend to do and having them to appropriate that now will save us the time later once we have the funding in our hands. That was the purpose of the bill, just to save us some time. Other than that, things were not changing anything. So, when I began the process, I considered it relatively easy to do. My intent was to, since 90 days or 3 months is a quarter of a year, we already have our budgets that have been sent in, and all we have to do is take 25% of those budgets, and that's your figures. But I think there was a misconception about what I intended to do, and part of that was probably my fault. I may not have communicated it properly. But anyway, I think we've got it all straightened out now. And I'm not sure why the states, what's going on there with the states being a request went out, I understand, for them to send the figures in. I thought we already had that. So I'm a little confused on that myself. But anyway, I think that we'll get it all straightened out in a day or two. So y'all be patient with us. There's a number of things going on in the country there. One thing, we have I understand that they're putting together a manual explaining. We have a committee doing that, putting together a manual explaining what we're trying to do here in re-inhabiting the Republic. That's a good idea. I think that it's needed. We'll be reviewing that, going over and talking to the folks about that. I think Governor Brady is involved in that process, and Governor Shahan and some others, I understand, are. And just to give you an overview of what re-inhabiting a republic looks like, you know, in a written form, because many people don't fully understand what we're trying to do, and unfortunately it's difficult. There are many, many ideas out here, but there's only one right idea. The right idea is to follow the Constitution. We have a lot of people saying and doing a number of things, talked some today, and they still think that we've got to go back to the Articles of Confederation and be nation states. Well, if they understood anything about law, they'd know better, but they don't. And they keep wanting to go and create nation states. America has never had nation states. That is a myth. America has a nation within free and independent states within that nation. That are all part and parcel of the whole. And that's how America was created, from our first constitutional government. And any other type of government will not work in this nation. The government that we have was implemented simply because there was chaos in our nation. The Articles of Confederation were deficient. There was a lot of things that we couldn't do, particularly in commerce, because we had no standard of currency. We now had no standard coinage or money across the nation. And so when you tried to trade as an independent state or an independent nation, as they want to call it today, then your currency was not valued the same as maybe your neighboring state was. And a lot of times people would go to the best value from foreign countries, and you would lose your contracts because they were looking for the value and looking for the most money. And so the states were actually competing against themselves. When the constitutional government was put in place, that all ended, because all the states now come together and work together through interstate commerce, through a common government. And it facilitated us being able to become one of the world's greatest superpowers. And that's where we came to. If you do away with that process, what you'll do is you will go backward in time. Instead of progressing, we will regress. And we will go back into a civilization that will be very limited. Your economy will die, basically. And the people will be out here, and I've heard this many times from even some of our own people, well, we just need to follow our heart. The Bible says that the heart of a man is wicked, and who can know it? You know, that's what they did in ancient Rome, in ancient Greece. They followed their heart, And because they followed their heart, they entered into wickedness. And they entered into behaviors that caused the destruction of their society and brought it to nothing. And it caught it, brought them to poverty. From the greatest nation status that there was on earth, they came to poverty because they followed their heart. People can't follow their heart. That's the reason government was instituted among men, because some people's heart is not good. Some people's hearts are evil. And if you have a strong man and his heart is evil, even though yours might be good and he wants to take your stuff, he will. And that's exactly what happened in early civilizations across the world. The strong took from the weak. And that's why government is important, because if you do away with a government like we have and a rule of law, you will have people that will take advantage of others, and that is the purpose of government, and to organize things and keep society peaceful and prevent chaos. The reason that you can sleep in your bed safely at night today is because you have a government. If you didn't, you would have bands of people wandering around the countryside. There would be no checks and balances, and they could do anything they wanted to do to you and your family, and you would have absolutely no recourse. The government is there to keep that in check. Now, it's not perfect, and it's not ever going to be perfect, because imperfect people created it. And I'm one of those imperfect people. But I've done my best and tried to help guide this process in the right way. Our founding fathers gave us a good footprint to follow, and that's the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, along with the Declaration of Independence. Those documents are based on the principles that we found not only in the Bible, but in many, many societies, even before the Bible was ever written. They still abode by those same principles that we do today in many of your civilized nations that existed long before the Bible was ever written. And so there, those principles go on back to time immemorial, and those principles are the principles of God that we follow, and that's why we have to have government. Many of the things that we do seem confusing to a lot of people, but there's a purpose. One of the things we're doing right now is the land patent process, and I get questions all the time, well, why you got to do a land patent? Is it constitutional? Yes, it is absolutely constitutional. It was created by our original constitutional government. The founding fathers created the process. I believe it was constitutional. And one of the things that we realized late last year was that we don't have landowners, and the Constitution requires us to have landowners, to have electors, to vote in a permanent government. And that's what the Constitution requires. So we realized we've got a problem there. So we went to work, and we fixed the problem. And I'm happy to announce that we're ready to move forward with the land patents now. Starting next week, we'll be receiving those in the Bureau of Republic Records. And we will be receiving the documents and putting them on scanning them and putting them on file and doing the process for you. And So if you want to do those, get with your people, the preparers, and get your land patent in place. It's going to be a great time to do that. Now, there's been some changes in Dominion Services. Tom Chapman has stepped up, and Sharon has always stepped up and taken charge of Dominion Services, and they're creating a new website. And you can email them if you have any questions at dominionservices.info@gmail.com. That's dominionservices.info@gmail.com if you have any questions for Tom or Sharon or any of the people. And what Tom is trying to do is establish a better span of control for around the states, and establish a person over each state. And so if you're interested, you're a preparer, or want to be a preparer, and you're interested in being one of the leaders in the states and a trainer, and he's got a good package for you that will I believe that's going to do a great job in compensating the people and helping. There's been some confusion stirred around in the last few days that we were going to change everything to where the trainers were only going to get $50 or something like that. It's not true. That has not been changed. And I just want to let people know there was some scuttlebutt going around about that in the last few days. That was a misunderstanding about something that was said, and it got spread like wildfire. Folks, we need to check our facts before we spread these things, because that's a lot of our problem is we spread rumors that we think are true, but they end up not being true, and that creates us a lot of problem and a lot of grief sometimes. So, with that, I want to thank everybody for participating in the call. I think I've said enough tonight. I know you got a busy agenda tonight, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I'm very thankful for all of you and all of your hard work and all of your prayers. My health is getting better. I've had some challenges lately, but I'm doing better. I was not in the hospital. I was told I was in the hospital in China. I don't know where that came from, but anyway. I hear all kind of things. But no, I was not in the hospital, but I did go to a clinic that is owned by a friend of mine, and did have some tests run, and I'm doing much better. And thank you for your prayers. And pray for our republic. Our republic needs God's guidance more now than ever. We're right at the doorway of moving forward and taking a giant step, and we need God to show us, to make sure that we step in the right direction. And I appreciate all of you, love all of you, and God bless you. And with that, I'll yield the floor.
Well, President Slim, I hear that you will be celebrating your birthday on the weekend.
Yeah, I'll be 56 years old on Saturday. So,
well, from all of us here in the Republic, we wish you all a very blessed and happy birthday. And for all of those who are so inclined, we'll also lift you up in prayer.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, Robert. God bless you.
God bless you. So, Rick, we'll suspend, I think, questions for the time being, if
yes,
that's all right
Rick,
with you.
Rick Weiner had a comment he wanted to make first, please.
Oh, go ahead. Uh-huh.
Well, I just want everybody to know that the president is quite a bit better looking now that he's got his health back in order, so just so you guys know. The second thing is, as the president said, the budget committee was a little bit disconnected because of just a series of events, and it was mostly the president and I's fault that we did not communicate properly what this budget committee was doing. There's been a few questions that have been directed at me and the president as to what the heck this committee is doing, and we have been so busy we just didn't really take the time to understand what they were doing. So, as the president said, it's his and my fault for not letting you guys know back on Monday as to what was coming up, but it has been straightened out. The committee has gotten together with us. They explained what their goals and objects are, and they have decided that at this point the what we call the master budget is adequate for what we're doing, and like the president said, we've divided it into quarters, 90-day quarters, and they are able to pull that information out of that and get things together. So that 7-day deadline that was put onto us from the committee on Monday has been removed because they have discovered that the information is there. We do want to lift our brother Jeff Smith up in prayer. He is at a clinic, hopefully getting his cancer situation taken care of. We'll give you reports as we know them, but everything looks very hopeful for him at this point. And Robert and Janine, that's all I have to report this evening, sir.
Very good. Are we going to have a forum for those in the general body politic to ask questions with regards to this budget and the pieces of it, and to help them just get their hands around it, or their heads around it?
On the budget, sir?
Yeah, I mean, and later on in the question and answer part of the call.
I'm not sure that we'll have time with that this evening, Robert and Rick, because we are this Armed Services Committee are standing by to get down to business, and I think that's going to take our time.
And actually, Robert, to answer your question directly, they had a call at 1 o'clock this afternoon for those people that were involved directly in that, And I believe Representative Edna Reed and Chief of Staff, Jeff Smith, Chief of Staff Pat Waltrip, and House Speaker Mark Lounsbery answered all the questions of the governors at that point. I believe everybody is understanding where it's at this point. So I don't believe that there should be very many questions or regarding that area, because an email was sent out to them explaining it. So just to answer your question, Robert.
Okay, well, so the governors are getting that tier done. Perhaps we can invite some of them and some of those same folks onto a roundtable call to address it in a week or two so that others can see it in perspective.
And, Robert, one other little bit of business before we get on to the Armed Services Committee is I need to mention that there will be, for land patent processors, there will be a training available this weekend in Ozark, and you can go to freedomyell.com to get information about that. And with that, I yield the floor, Robert.
Very good. All right, so Brad, we're going to move straight into your Armed Services Committee. Let me set the tone here. Brad has the entire Armed Services Committee on the call with us here. A week ago or so, the Ranger program was presented to the Armed Services Committee by Governor Kerry Sheehan. And this evening, Governor Kerry Sheehan and Security Chief Tim Pledger are going to lay out for us a layout for, actually, we're going to be like in the gallery. They're going to be laying out for the Armed Services Committee the Ranger program. We will then hear the backwards and forwards between the folks on the Armed Services Committee in an edited form. The first time I heard this, it was like it went for 2.5 hours. So we're going to look at having a half-hour sampling of their backwards and forwards. And then, unlike what would happen in Congress, we're going to open up questions and answers and give all those on the call 45 minutes or so to ask the questions to not just the Armed Services Committee, but to Security Chief Pledger and Governor Sheehan. So that's the lay of the land here. And with that, Brad, I'm going to open it up to you, and you run your committee as you normally would.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Janine. Just wanted to clarify a couple things. I don't know how many are on the call right now as far as the committee and if Carrie's on as well. Is Carrie on?
Yes, Carrie's on. And
okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. And it looks like we have a lot of you. I will unmute the ones who we muted because of phone noises. I'm going to ask you this, all of you who are in the Armed Services Committee. If you're not speaking, will you please mute your phone and then unmute it? When you are the one that's speaking, it'll just help us with any background noise.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah.
Just really quick, a couple of things that we've done as of late as far as a committee. One, adding a little more transparency to what we're doing so we can get more feedback from the people. And one of those was actually having a website for the committee. That website is republicarmedservices.org. There you'll be able to review documentation that we're reviewing as a committee. We submit our minutes there as well on a weekly basis so that people that are interested in what's going on in armed services will be able to go there at their convenience and see what we're doing. Tonight, it's not going to be exactly how our call is, because I think one of the things is we wanted to kind of have the people ask some questions in combination with some of the committee members asking questions that Kerry Sheehan, and I think Tim Pledger on as well, Robert?
Yes, he is.
Okay, great. And we've had a couple of weeks where we've talked to them, and it's been a great discourse, and appreciate everybody's time in coming on the call tonight. I guess the first thing, maybe we could talk, Kerry or Tim, maybe can kind of do an overview of what is the Ranger program for those people that are not aware of it, and just kind of give a general overview of that program. You there, Kerry?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, Brad?
I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I don't know if Mr. Pledger is on. If he wants to give the overview, I will tell you that the American Securities Act that was submitted to y'all and then the basic American Ranger plan was mainly his writing. I had input on it, but he did a wonderful job in putting it together. He's a lot more eloquent on his writing than I would have been, so I'm very, very impressed with what he put together, because he brought the concepts and the ideas that we had discussed and brought it forth very well in the writings. So,
great. Thank you. Hey, Tim, are you there? Are you able to?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you, Tim.
Basically, the American Ranger, the concept, is the securing of the American people, including their rights and other forms of property. Some people may not be aware that rights are a form of property. And we find ourselves in a different situation than our forefathers did when they first formed the country, when they first wrote the Declaration of Independence and later penned the Constitution and ratified it along with the what we call the Bill of Rights. At this time, we have a foreign power that is in place all across this land. It's well documented that the United States Corporation is foreign to the Republic, but it has its tentacles all across this land. And the Republic has been dormant for so long, the corporation has, and its sub-corporations have had dominion. And the people of the Republic, we the people on the land, have a right to protect themselves, have a right to secure themselves. It's well documented in the Constitution that government de jure is authorized to secure the people and their property. So the American Ranger is a unique concept for this day to deal with the special challenges that we have in place now. The people themselves have been dumbed down over the years. We have been distracted, and we have not maintained a well-regulated militia. So there's a void, a great void there. The people are not highly trained as a well-regulated militia would be. We have not had training in defending our lives and our property. And the American Ranger concept is one that helps meet the needs of the people. The people are primarily responsible for their own security. The people should not be looking outside of themselves for security. The people should not be looking outside of themselves for anything that the people are responsible for doing on their behalf or on behalf of others. So many in the audience are somewhat at a disadvantage because, as far as I know, the Ranger Plan has not been made public in the sense of it being distributed widely across the Republic to all of we the people. But it is in committee. It is in Congress. There are people who have access to it. And I guess I'd like to try to summarize it in as few words as possible beyond what I've just stated regarding securing the people and their rights and other forms of property. And I can do that with some examples. Let's say that we get in a situation where one of our Republic people is being dealt with on the basis of a municeps, which is a citizen of a municipal corporation. Municeps is from two Latin words meaning to take office, and a lot of people are not aware that that's where their not only their constitutional rights, but even their creator-given rights have been compromised through concepts involved in the establishment and operation and furtherance of the power and dominion of the municipal corporation. But if we have one or more of us who are being detained or their liberties are otherwise being infringed upon for things that are not crimes, there's no injured party, then the American Rangers are there as a well-organized and highly trained force to come to the aid of we the people and intervene so that the rights of we the people are protected. And that could involve negotiating on the scene of a particular an attempt to make an arrest, or it could involve negotiating after an arrest is made and making sure that that man or woman from among we the people gets the full enjoyment of their liberty. No one should be deprived of their liberty. No one should be deprived of their property. No one should be deprived of other property in the form of rights without due process of law, without a proper hearing where both sides are able to present evidences and a righteous and just decision is rendered. So the American Rangers would be there to help secure the liberty of we the people, and that's just one example. Another example is sometimes there might be among us those who do not have the spirit of the Republic and its justice operating within them, and they may have a selfish agenda. And while they may be considered to be members of the Republic, they may do things that are lawless and infringe upon the rights of others. And we have a responsibility in the Republic to police our own ranks in a matter of speaking. So the American Rangers would be involved in helping to hold accountable those who are operating outside the law, who are infringing the rights of others, who are taking from others. And those others might even be people outside of the Republic membership who have been violated by some so-called member of the Republic. And this is very important to establishing our peaceful purpose and our honorable purpose within this society where we have different jurisdictions at work. So that would be another situation. And what if there are some foreign invading forces that are involved in coming onto our soil? How will we organize? How will we, what will be the front line force to repel that invasion? Well, the answer is in where we cannot have a standing army for more than 2 years running, the American Rangers have an ever-present force, an ever-present deterrence against invaders. And the American Rangers would be the at the forefront of repelling an invasion and organizing we the people, helping to regarding the organization of we the people. And we could go through many, many scenarios, but the security of we the people in Republic needs and it requires special forces, in a manner of speaking, people who are, it's their full-time job to make sure that we the people are secure. We're secure in our lives, our liberty, and property, and in various rights. And So the plan was put together. The organization was created with that in mind. Initially, a total of 60,000 Rangers who would be authorized to, in official capacity, bear arms. Now, we can't get around the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the rights of the people to bear arms. There's no restriction on that. But in official capacity, there needs to be authorization to do some things. So the American Rangers would be authorized to bear arms, specifically on the startup. The goal is 60,000 across the nation. We have currently 11 judicial districts associated with the government de facto. And what we have done in the plan is take the westernmost district and split it up into two parts. The southern part, included with state of Alaska, and the northern part including southern part including the state of Hawaii, and the northern part including the state of Alaska. And that would be there would be approximately 5,000 rangers, badge bearing rangers, in each region, each of the 12 regions. There would be support staff. In addition to that, there would be support facilities to maintain vehicles. We have plans in place. We're looking toward having rangers who are available and ready to mobilize and move airborne. So we're looking at having airborne units. We're looking at having a cavalry type approach in regions where that is needed, especially out west. And Governor Shahan is very well knowledgeable about that aspect of the Ranger program that we're looking at. And since I mentioned his name, I'd like to say that the plan and the program could not come together as efficiently and effectively as it has without Kerry Shahan and his input, and also Pete out there in New Mexico. And some preliminary work that the American Rangers Executive Board did. There was a press release that went out a short time ago talking about the American Rangers Executive Board and it being disbanded or dissolved, and it has been because it's fulfilled its purpose, it's fulfilled its function. And but there's a mistake regarding American Ranger Executive Council. There is no such thing as an American Ranger Executive Council. I apologize if the information hasn't been corrected in a more timely manner, but there have been some difficulties in getting that word out. But what's going to replace the American Ranger Executive Board is within the structure of the American Ranger organization, there will be a team, a core team, consisting of the Chief Ranger, his deputy, and the regional commanders that will form the American Ranger Council, the acronym ARC, or ARC, and they will be primarily responsible for establishing protocol, procedure, directives for the American Ranger Agency, and for disciplining the American Rangers. And there will be a very strict code of conduct, code of ethics that is followed in connection with that. And Governor Shahan, I typically call Brother Kerry. So let me lapse into some informality here and say Brother Kerry was highly instrumental. He developed the initial draft of the American Ranger Code of Conduct, and I would like at this time for Governor Shahan or Brother Kerry to go over the code of conduct. And I think that will go a long way to letting the people know the intent regarding the American Rangers and what we would expect out of them in securing the people and their rights. I yield the floor for now.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate all the kind words. It's been amazing to me, a lot of the input that we've had and the things that have been brought together, that it has been a plan very well put together, a very good structure. Of course, we're always open to anything that we find. One other thing I would like to add to what Tim said, that the American Ranger Council that was designed to be made up by the chief, the deputy chief, and all the region commanders would also be in charge of deciding and setting up the training. So that's a very important aspect, because training has to be continual. The American Ranger Code that was drew up is a 12-point of the code. There's 12 points to the code, and I'll read them right quick. They're not very long. They're real simple. They're real to the point. And starting with number one, the American Ranger Code is abide by the laws of the Creator. Number two, respect all others. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And number three, live each day with courage. Number four, take pride in your work. And number five, always finish what you start. And number six, do what has to be done with honor and integrity. And number seven, be tough but fair. And number eight, when you make a promise, keep it. Number nine, ride for the brand. Serve the Creator and protect the people of the Republic at all times. Number 10, talk less, listen well, say more with action, and let what you say be the truth. And number 11, remember that some things are not for sale. And 12, and finally, know where to draw the line. And I yield the floor.
Thank you, Kerry. A couple of things. Well, I guess we'll get into some questions. Maybe I'll start off with the first one. I know we've asked it before, but just for the people to hear a question is, how would a ranger, how is the training different from, let's say, de facto agencies to what the rangers receive as far as training? What are the differences in the program?
Well, one of the main differences that will be done with the rangers is to take and train them in the de jure side, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and, of course, the first document that was listed as our rule of law, the Bible, the Scriptures, the Holy Scriptures. There's many things in there that as we've all learned and come along, that we're going to have to change some of that thinking. And for those that want to be rangers, they're going to have to absolutely understand the rule of law of the Republic.
Great. I'll throw it to the committee here if there's some other questions. Maybe our co-chair, Brian Craig, are you online?
Yes, Brent, I am.
You have a question for Tim or Kerry?
I'm busy taking notes. I have not come up with a question yet, but I will chime in when I do.
Okay, let me know. Any other committee members have a question? Let's go ahead and chime in.
This is Bob Brad.
How you doing, Bob?
Fine, thank you. For the record, Representative Robert Lord from Tennessee, one of the primary concerns in any piece of legislation, of course, is justification through the Constitution or constitutional justification that Congress has actually the power within the is given the power by the people and the states to enact what it is they're trying to into legislation. And I'm still not.
Did we lose Representative Lord?
It's sounding like we did lose him. I still see his phone number active. Well, no, he just
Oh, you must have lost the line.
I think he just dropped off. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, when he gets jumping back on here, is there any other committee member has a question?
I think I'm still here.
Okay, there you are.
Okay, sorry. Time to buy a new headset. Well, I'm not sure how much was lost, but my question in a nutshell is, how can we be reassured ourselves in order to reassure the objections that are maybe not so much objections, but the requirements that the states and the individuals will put upon us to constitutionally justify this act? Where in particular would you refer us to refer them? And I yield.
Okay, this is Secretary Pledger. May I address that?
Yes, please, Tim.
Okay. Have you read the act, the American Securities Act?
Yes, I've read it a couple of times.
Okay. Do you recall that the Declaration of Sovereign Intent is expressly included in the act?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Are you aware of the fundamental law form that the people have authorized and required that's expressly stated in the Declaration of Sovereign Intent?
I didn't understand the first part of that. Would you repeat it, please?
Okay. Are you aware of the fundamental law form expressly stated in the Declaration of Sovereign Intent that involves...
Yes, I understand.
Okay, stricter, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution for the United States of America, circa 1791, with the 10 articles and amendment. That is the authority. It's expressly stated in the Act. It can't be severed from the Act unless Congress decides to reword the draft of the act that I provided. The authority is expressly in the act and locks that in. So what we have are principles of scripture. We have principles of the Declaration of Independence, and we have the principles of the Constitution for the United States of America as amended 1791. That is the authority that establishes the boundaries. Rangers cannot, it would be impossible for them to lawfully act outside of that fundamental law form. And I hope that answers your question. If we're familiar with the Constitution and the 10 articles, first 10 articles and amendment, we will know that the people's rights must be held sacred and not violated. And so we don't want to, I applaud your due diligence in making sure that the people are not defrauded of those rights, and that there's nothing that severs them from those rights. But the wording of the act itself, which captures the fundamental law form as expressly stated in the Declaration of Sovereign Intent, is the authority and the restrictions placed upon the Rangers. The Rangers cannot act outside of due process. The Rangers cannot act in any way to deny the people deny the people of their rights. And it expressly in the act, the language expressly includes the sovereignty of we the people. The sovereignty of we the people cannot lawfully be violated by the American Rangers. And if any
okay.
American Ranger, if any American Ranger does so, he answers to we the people. He will be, first of all, the first line of discipline is the organization itself. And then he comes under criminal prosecution, perhaps depending on what his offense is, the nature of his offense, and whether there has been a a minor bobble of whether there's been an intentional thing that has occurred, and that, of course, would be up to the law of the land. And
pardon me for interrupting you, but I think it'll save us all some time if I ask you more pointedly what my question is, because I understand all the what you're saying. More pointedly, my objection is that this act takes power away from the states, who are protected by the individuals protecting themselves and the militias acting in their defense when necessary. It's taking the power and sovereignty from the state, and it's giving it to the it's sending it up to the national government level, and it is empowering not the legislative branch. It's sending that power right over to the executive branch. And there needs to be something.
What is the language?
No, there needs to be
that?
Something within the Constitution that gives Congress that power. And that's what I'm asking for.
Would you agree
for.
That Congress has a power to secure the people, to provide for their security?
Well, I would also say that in Article the 10th, if it's not explicitly stated, Congress doesn't have the power reversed to the counties and to the people therein,
okay.
Or the state and the people therein. So that's where my concern is at.
Okay.
I don't see a blanket authority.
I will go back to the question that I tried to get out just a few moments ago. What language in the act severs that authority from even the people? Or the states or the counties. Doesn't the language of the acts show that there are shared powers?
Well, the language of the act doesn't. Law isn't based on the language of the act. The language of the act has to conform with the law of the land, which is the Constitution. And that's back to where I'm trying to get an answer. Where in the Constitution is Congress specifically given the authority to establish this national policing force, to use your words?
Well, would it not go with the general authority of Congress to provide for the well-being of the people?
Well, that argument could be used for the Department of Homeland Security, could be used for the Department of Education, and all the misuses of the Commerce Clause as well. In our reestablishment of the republic, it's my understanding that we're going to be a little bit more constructionist than that, and we can't assume, because it's not stated in the Constitution, that it's okay to do it. On the other hand, it has to be stated clearly in the Constitution before we dare step out on the ice. And that's my approach, anyhow.
Okay.
And I don't want to take the floor all night. I'm willing to pass
this
by for now.
I see where you're coming from, and I appreciate your due diligence and your heart to guard those sacred rights. There are some things that in the Constitution there are not. It was constructed. Involving general principles. There were some things specified, but there were also general principles. And in my reading the Constitution, and in my comprehension of the Constitution, and in my study of law for some 30 years, I don't see a conflict. If we're looking for something within the Constitution that says thou hast authority to ordain rangers, we're not going to find it. There are many things within the Constitution that we're not going to find that specific language for. But if we look at the principles involved, the people, where does the Constitution get its authority? It gets its authority from the people. Who is Congress? It is the people by representation. And what I would ask is what restriction in the Constitution is violated. And I would go further to say that no restriction in the Constitution is violated by the act. No provision in the Constitution would be violated by there being American Rangers who were there.
Well, I would answer that by saying the restriction is in the 10th Amendment because there is no power given to Congress, as you said, to establish a Rangers Act. And I don't see any other power given to Congress to establish the National Security Force that you're speaking of. And I might clarify my point a little bit more by saying, historically, the security that you're speaking of, and you spoke of the Rangers replacing a weakened or basically non-existent organized militias within the state, well, that's just, in my thinking, that's what it should go back to. And if there is to be a Ranger program, it should be administered on the state level, closest to the people as possible, not because I don't trust the administration of within our republic today, but just that we've already seen how far it can go afield. And if it were to go anywhere near the Clinton and Obama and Bush type of administrations, would we even be having this conversation today if they had a national police force such as we're talking about now? That's where I'm coming from. Those are my concerns. And I don't want to tie up. Everybody probably has questions, but I just wanted to get that out in the air so that you know it's out here.
Yes. Well, I don't want to skirt the issue. Do you have the 10th Amendment handy to read it?
Did you say you do?
Do you have the 10th Amendment handy to read it?
I have it on my desk, but I'm not in that room right now. Do you have it?
Okay, not in hand. Not
Kevin,
in hand.
I've got it right
there,
here.
There's okay. Let me say something.
Hey Tim, do you want somebody to read it?
Yeah. I would like for you to read the 10th Amendment. Thank you.
Robert, do you have it?
I'm about three steps away from it. Oh, excuse me, you meant the other Robert.
The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Thanks.
Okay. So we're talking here about things of that are beyond a local level scope. The general government has some duties and obligations and powers regarding the international scene that the state governments do not have. And one thing that we need to keep in mind that the scenarios, every scenario that I've described so far, except for the one where we have a republic member that's violating others' rights, goes to an international scale. Every de facto law enforcement agency out there is a foreign entity. It is within the realm of general government to deal on the international level in areas where the states do not deal. It involves commerce. The states cannot regulate commerce. That's already been given over. So the language is already in the Constitution dealing with things at the general government level involving international affairs. And what we have the Rangers involved in is things that involve international affairs. That's already been given over. The American Securities Act gives no new power to general government. But what it does is it meets challenges, internationally related challenges and commercially related challenges that we face in this day and age without transgressing against any rights, authorities, or powers retained by the states or their people. The people have given, through various legislation, have given the authority to make arrests to people at the county level, to people at the state level, and to people at the general government level. But none of that takes away the right and even the obligation associated with citizens' arrest. Citizens' arrest remains in full force in effect, even though other agencies, whether they be at county level or state level or general government level, can make arrests. The thing is, the people don't need the legislation to do those things, but the other agencies do need some legislation. They need the authority of the people. So the only thing that this does is address the international general government-related responsibilities to help secure the people while the people are getting their states and counties in order.
Well, it does. It does go a little further than that.
Hey, guys, just real quick, because we can go on. I want to mix it up with some questions. We're going to be mixing some from the committee and then some from the people. We have a Q&A queue of people in there that want to ask questions as well.
I will be glad to yield. I'm glad to yield, Brad. That's fine.
Okay.
We can take this up at any time.
Yes. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. Right.
Hey, Brad.
Let's take a question from the queue from the people and any questions regarding this act.
Well, I
and
wanted,
we do
we do have some, Janine. I just have one that's a write-in, and I think it's maybe more of a comment, but Security Chief Pledger, you might like to comment on it. Kevin says, I have begun to detail in Virginia Free State Ranger Program. This is in its infancy, but I have broken it down into 7 divisions and 44 units throughout the state. That's his comment. Do you want to make any response to that?
Sure. Well, the American Rangers are not there. They have no authority to deny the states their rights to provide for their own security. The general government still has the responsibility at the general level, and especially in dealing with international and interstate matters, not just international, but interstate matters. And so I'm glad to know that people are out there with their heads in the Ranger concept, because I believe that it is greatly needed. And my concept of the American Rangers is to provide assistance to the counties and states, not to displace, but to provide assistance. If they don't need assistance, that's wonderful. But I don't know of any state that we have going right now that has the capacity really to protect itself, to secure the people in the way that needs to be done at this time. And
but Tim, do you see in time that obviously each free state would have their own ranger program, Arizona free state, ranger program, Tennessee, Illinois, and then how would the national rangers interact with the states once they have a ranger program in place? How would that work?
Okay, it's important. There's a fundamental concept going along with the fundamental law form and the authority involved in that. The authority is we the people. So the American Rangers have no authority to violate we the people in the several states or the counties. So I see the American Rangers being an aid to the establishment of the state and county ranger programs to fill in the gap in the meantime, and then I see them working cooperatively.
Okay.
Without, of course, doing it like the current federal agencies of government de facto. because they do not have the same the bridles that the American Rangers have to abide by the Constitution and make sure that people's rights are not violated, and that they everything that they what they do secures the people and their rights and other forms of property.
Thank you for that, Tim. Do we have
Brad? This is Kerry. May I make a comment, please?
Sure, please.
Well, on this, we seem to be missing the point here. First of all, the Congress has authority. The General Congress, the National Congress, whatever you want to call it, there is crimes that they have the authority to by the Constitution to set up. Crimes that are committed, for instance, like treason, for counterfeiting. My question to the representative, I believe is Representative Lord, is, all right, if you have that occurring, who are you going to get to enforce those or go take care of those? In other words, where they can be brought to a court of justice and tried before the people for crimes. The second thing is on the states are more than willing and able to set up their own ranger program or whatever program, doesn't have to be called rangers, I guess, whatever they want to come up with. And as Tim Pledger just stated, the American Rangers will be there to help support them. I believe the states are going to be so covered up and so busy when everything happens with the Republic. You're talking about a great undertaking for training and putting people out there. And again, I want to reiterate, the American Rangers are there to protect the people and preserve peace. We're not out there as a law enforcement. And I yield.
Big difference.
May
hey, Bob, I don't know, you, Bob Lord, you want to respond to that?
Yes, I'd like to respond to that if I can, Brad.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we're going from the last to the first. These individuals that are being trained as rangers could just as well be located. I assume they will be located in their home states and in their home counties. It could be under the authority of the states, the governor and the legislature, the state government rather than the federal government. There doesn't need to be, in my estimation, a department established to administer this from the national level, that there needs to be, and I understand, a level of national rangers. But my first understanding in the program when I was hearing about it was that there would be separate national rangers and state rangers. If that's the case, then the national rangers could be more confined more or less to those international issues. The states would handle the things that the states normally handled at the state level. And finally, my big question is, how would the National Rangers interface with the local sheriffs and the local law enforcement agencies and some other things when there's overlapping of jurisdiction? Who would take precedence? There's a whole other area that I'm questioning, and maybe it could be clarified, but my point remains that the sovereignty should be at the state level unless there's a compelling interest for the people to for it to go up to a national level. And I yield.
Bob,
hey, Brad, can I respond to that?
Well, just real quick, because we have the president on, and he wanted to add in this conversation real quick, and then we'll get right to your question there, Rowdy. President Turner, are you on the call?
Yes, thank you.
Hey, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. My question is, has anyone heard of the U.S. Marshals Service?
Yes.
I don't know when it was established. I would have to look back in history to see, but I do believe that we had a service, even under the original Congress, to deal with issues between the states. Because we're talking about interstate issues here with the Ranger program, that the state law enforcement officers don't have the authority to deal with. We have to have some kind of force, policing force, for lack of a better word, or I prefer to call them peace officers, to handle these issues in international commerce between the states. And that's what the Ranger Force is all about. It is not to go in and meddle with the state's business. It's to deal with the issues in interstate where not one state or the other state has specific authority to do, because that's the job of the general government. I believe, and if somebody please, if you know more about it than I do, and you probably do, please let me know, but I believe that was in place prior to Washington taking over and becoming a corporate government. I believe that we did have a marshal service even back then that was a national marshal service.
Mr. President, actually, the committee did some research on that and found that George Washington actually appointed some marshals back in 1789. We have some of those resources on our website that we researched a little bit, just to add to your point.
Well, let me ask you, all of you on board here tonight, a question. Do you think that George Washington did an unlawful act that was contrary to the very Constitution that he fought and bled for? I don't think so.
Hey, Brad,
thank you. Well, Rowdy, I think Rowdy chimed in and had a question. Thank you, Mr. President, for your response there. There was another gentleman that popped in and had a question.
That was Kevin.
Pardon?
I have a number of calls in the queue, so we can just...
Let's jump in the queue and have some questions from there.
Thank you. Our first caller is 563 area code.
Yeah, this is Rowdy in Davenport, Iowa. I'm a congressman from Iowa and Speaker of the House for the state of Iowa. Question that I had, a couple of things that come to mind. When we talk about the national government, and this is a comment first, remember that in the states there's 50 states, and in a way you have 50 experiments. It seems to me that it would be entirely appropriate to have a National Ranger program that the people that are going to act as rangers in the various states within the states would go through that program, so there'd be uniformity. And that uniformity would go to the idea of the people being protected no matter where they travel in all of the several states. Tim or Kerry, you want to comment on that?
Well, Rowdy, I certainly agree with you on that. One of the questions in what you was talking about, one of the things that we've been talking about that I was going to try to get out, so you've opened the opportunity, is first of all, when everything happens with the Republic, I believe there's going to be many states, there'll be some that have the capabilities, have people to institute their own ranger program or whatever they're deciding to do with go as sheriffs or whatever. But there's going to be many states that doesn't have that capability. We can't forget those people. I don't care how few or how many in the states, those people have the right to protection, and that's guaranteed in the Constitution.
Thank you. And I have a follow-up point to make, and I want some comment on this. You know, this concern with national, and I hear it, and I heard it from Bob Lord, and this is a man I like very much, and I respect him. I consider him a friend. But I hear this from a lot of people. Concern about national and the idea of power national. Let me tell you, coming from the state of Iowa, problems can happen in the governor's office and in other offices in a state. And sometimes the Constitution is not necessarily respected and the people's rights are not necessarily respected. And the 10th Amendment, ultimately, the rights are derived back to the states. And I will say this, there's a lot of things that are going to be eliminated from national government oversight that are currently conducted by the de facto. Well, shops close up. I think we need to look at most of that going back to the people. And if the people determine that a state or a county or a community ought to be providing those services, then that would be up to those people to make that effort and then fund that effort. But don't let us be unaware that there are issues within states, and people don't always abide by the Constitution, and that is a concern. So the idea of having a ranger program that is where there's almost a boot camp training program at the national level, so there's uniformity. And then, and I wanted to ask this question of you, gentlemen, when they go back to the states, and let's say they're in the ranger program within the states, having been trained, is there going to be a number of those who have met a certain level of qualification that in the event of an emergency in another state, neighboring state, that the word can go out and that certain individuals, having met a certain criteria, are then called on to leave their states to go into this other neighboring state or border state to take care of what needs to be done there? Now I yield.
Secretary Pledger, yeah, there is provision. The Act provides for that. The Ranger Plan provides for that. And we're looking at being able to mobilize. I mentioned earlier airborne rangers. We're looking at being able to mobilize rangers from different regions and bring them into a particular region that is in need. So the answer is a resounding yes to your question, Rowdy. And beyond that, the rangers are not just there for to arrest people. They're there to render assistance. They're peace officers. So if we get into a situation involving a natural disaster, they're even there for that. And there are things that state rangers are not going to have the authority to do to go across state lines. But the general government rangers would have the authority to go across state lines. Once again, this keeps coming up. We're looking at general government authority, crossing state lines, things interstate and things international. And, yeah, we're looking at being able to mobilize. And if Tennessee is in dire need of assistance, let's say there's a great earthquake and Memphis sinks into the mud of the Mississippi and things are in great disarray and there's a call for help, then we have the already authority, the pre-existing authority to come in there across state lines and render assistance. But there are limitations. The rangers can't come in there and start shooting the people and taking the people's property from them. There are some very horrendous things that were done after Hurricane Katrina. And it's not the rangers' place to do that. The rangers have very severe restrictions in that realm because they have to maintain, support, and protect the people and their rights and other forms of property. So your point, Rowdy, is, and your question is very good from the perspective of general government and the people generally providing for their own security and having the ability to render aid to each other across state lines by an interstate and international agency.
All right, so folks from the Armed Services Committee, Brad just apologized. His computer froze up, so the next question can come from amongst yourselves. Do you have a comment or question you'd like to make?
This is Kevin. I have a comment.
Okay, Kevin, go ahead.
Just something I want to share that people may not be aware of yet. Under the Ranger Plan, there's a section, Immunity, and I'd like to read that, if I may. And it says, no American Ranger is immune from prosecution for violating the law, including exceeding agent authority. There is no immunity for unauthorized acts or omissions. And it kind of goes on from there, but I think that's real important for people to understand, and that might help Representative Lord and some of the other people with their questions, because I think that's the biggest fear people see is the TSA and Homeland Security just have so overstepped their bounds and they're not held accountable, and we have you know, it's in the very beginnings of the Ranger Plan where it states this about the immunity. And I just wanted to share that, and I yield.
Very good. Janine, you want to take the next in the queue from the round table?
Yes, let's take Mark Gardner from Nevada. Go ahead, Mark. You have the floor. Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you to everybody at the roundtable and also Chairman Luchik. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on your committee. I would like to say, as the T&I committee chairman, or ask a question, is there anything in the infrastructure part of this that we need to look at and with the T&I committee, transportation infrastructure? And also some points on the topic about control of the American Rangers and whether they're jurisdictionally correct or not. My understanding is the militias are controlled by the governors of the state. The state rangers, Nevada Rangers or whatever ranger you're talking about, would be kind of like a militia force. So I see the American Ranger program, the overall program, is more of a management program to synchronize the functions between the states. Now, if you just made the American Rangers a reserve force that would be available to be called by the governors and give the governors the jurisdiction to make the emergency call to the National Reserve Force, would that settle this issue? And I'll leave that open to whoever wants to answer that.
Okay. Governor Shahan, would you like to handle that one?
I'm sorry, I was muted. let me break this down, Mark. You're asking if your question is if the Rangers be put under the governors? Is that your basic question?
Yeah, well, the governors control their militia forces, okay? And if the American Rangers was a reserve force that could be called to any state in an emergency or be utilized on a national basis, but it would have to be a national emergency for the American Rangers to be called up in a general way. If they were going to be called specifically by a governor, like the governor's got some problem in a state and needs some reserve forces, the governor would control the number of forces he would need to his state, not the American Rangers. The governor would say, hey, I need 10,000 extra guys over here, quick. And the coordinators at the American Ranger force would then coordinate and send in the forces. There would be it'd be more like a reserve coordination service or to synchronize all the requirements of meet any emergency.
Well, absolutely, Mark. The Rangers would be ready that if a governor called and said, could you send some a force down here, and he names a force that I'm in need, and of course the Rangers would need to know what exactly is he encountering, and they'll be more than willing to go help if the things that are coming under that falls under the Ranger authority, in other words, what they're designed to do, and that is to protect the people of the Republic and to preserve peace. You betcha that would absolutely be used when a governor needed it.
Well, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that by emphasizing that the governors have control of the American Ranger force rather than a national police force, it might settle the issue that this is a national police force. I guess that's where I'm trying to come from.
So you would want 50 bosses over a force? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, they wouldn't. If the American Rangers were a reserve force, like let's say that you have, I don't know, some number in each state, 10,000 Rangers in each state. I'm just throwing out a number here. And you've got a reserve force of 50,000 at the American Ranger level. Those American Rangers at the national level wouldn't do a whole lot until some governor had a demand. They would kind of be on salary, kind of like a a militia that gets called up when they're needed. They got, or like a National Guard, they go for training every, you know, periodically, and otherwise they sit at home until that national emergency occurs or that state emergency occurs.
Well, we are looking at a reserve unit for the Rangers that could be utilized for that, absolutely. But the thing about it is the Rangers are not only out there to protect the people of the Republic, but there's many other things like security. There has to be security for some of the elected officials and some of the things that goes on that now I guess you could basically call it under de facto the Secret Service, but that would fall under the Rangers to provide security. Also, the Rangers will also be utilized for the national courts to maintain those, and I can't see how you could mix that with them being under each state. You're going to have an organization that is set up to take care of these other needs. And like I said, who are you going to call for some crime that is committed, like counterfeiting, that is being done on a national basis through many, many states, or maybe even through all the states? That's one of those things that you have to have that. And like that was just discussed, that Brad brought out, you know, the George Washington saw the need to institute marshals. If you go back and read some of that, that was some of the reasons they knew they had to have an organization.
Well, maybe the American Rangers
guys,
should.
Excuse me, guys. I just need to do a timestamp in here. This is on the Republic Roundtable. We try to a lot of folks come in for a 90-minute update to see what's going on, to get plugged in. And I know some of those folks have to go at this point, but I just want to say this conversation is very important, and I want us to continue it. And it's such an honor to be part of the gathering of the Armed Services Committee as you deliberate and you share these ideas and you get clear on the direction that you're going to bring to the people, and even allowing us as the people to ask questions in here. So I just want to say thank you.
Robert?
Some folks... Yes,
I'm sorry. Possibility is, you know, we do want our questions to be kept short and concise, and maybe Brad, you can give an email address where people could send extended thoughts to, and that would help with our time.
Secretary Pledger here. May I make a brief comment before we get too far away from the last question that was answered? Question that was presented?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Okay. We have a difficulty in authorizing a governor the powers of general government. It's not constitutional. If we can find a way for the governor to have constitutional authority that's been granted to general government, that would be a possibility, but we need to be careful about that. And we can operate cooperatively, and we need to be careful not to be too divisive in our thinking and too selfish. We are not independent, and the governor should not be power hungry and afraid to cooperate, and we should not be getting into a turf war when it comes to the security of the people. We are interdependent, and there are powers delegated to general government, and there are powers that are given to the governor, and the governor doesn't have general powers. And we're addressing general powers with the American Ranger program, and I yield.
This is Tim Turner. May I comment on that?
Absolutely.
Mr. President. Go ahead.
Okay. During an emergency, and I am very well trained on emergency operations. That was one of the things I did for 10 years for the government. During an emergency where you have to call in forces to keep the peace or what have you, quell the disturbance or whatever the need is, or disaster assistance, a governor has so many duties that he would not even have not only does he would he have so many duties he wouldn't be able to control a force or command a force, he would not even have the training and ability and the knowledge to command a force in most places. Governors are politicians. If you go back and look at the United States military, we put it up under the politicians about 60 or 70 years ago, and they pretty much destroyed the United States military's ability to do their job. And that's the same thing that you would have with the American Ranger program if you put it under the governors, because you would have politics operating a peacekeeping force that is there for the people. And I yield.
Brad, you're up.
Brad. This Representative Lord, if there's some dead space here, I have a couple of thoughts.
Yes,
go ahead. I mean, go ahead with the queue. I'm not wanting to butt in here.
No, it's the committee's turn for questions and comments. I think Brad might be having phone trouble. Go ahead.
Okay. I just would, the president's last comment, I would say that wherever the power lies, at whatever level of government, there's going to be a struggle for that power. So the same thing will go on, at least in time. And again, Mr. President, I'm not concerned about your principles or your integrity at all, but we've got to be long-term minded about this. And again, individual liberties are more easily protected when the power is kept closest to the people, of course. But what I really wanted to say before I listened to your comment and had to respond to that was that we don't need to reinvent the wheel here. And you all know that I'm averse to giving powers away from the people in the states. And it's been established long before the de facto took control that every concern that we have right now, with the exception of the difference of de facto and de jure jurisdictions and how a ranger or some sort of a national law force might need to interact with the rogue de facto in a local sense. All of that has already been covered in several articles of the Constitution underneath the militias. In Article 4, Section 4, if there is a disturbance, an invasion, a riot within a state, then the national government has the power to come in and help them. And I believe you'll see that historically that's been done by bringing in militias from the nearby states to deal with it. And I'm going to be as brief as I can here, and here I go being brief. That's going to say that everything is already in place, the militias, and it bothers me that the Rangers will be supplanting the local militias. Are they supposed to atrophy and fade away because they no longer have a place in the scheme of things? And if so, what's to become of this new power in the executive branch 100 years from now, thinking that far ahead? So I have a number of concerns, and you've all been really patient and gracious to listen to me air them. So I'm just going to drop off here. Hopefully someone else is ready. I yield.
Yes,
thank
our
you.
Next our next.
I'm sorry, I just want to let everyone know Brad is coming back on the call again. So go ahead, Robert.
Okay, Brad's having continual Windows problems here. He must be, what's that other system they use? Not Windows, but that's cell phone. What is it?
He's an old Mac user.
Oh, Mac user, there you go. Okay, we have our next caller on the Republic Roundtable. So go ahead, area code 764.
I'm sorry, it's area code 262.
Oh, first, yeah, sorry. I'll leave
Hello.
It to you.
Go ahead,
Hi,
caller.
Please identify yourself.
Good evening. This is Daniel Lee from the Flores family. Can you turn that down? I have so many questions. Now, I've been appointed, I guess you could say, with the Wisconsin Republic, and let's see, I actually got a list of questions here. But on the last thing that was just said, I'm curious. Now, we are not a police, and being a political enforcement, that's what we have already. I'm under the impression that we are just a lawful procedure as officers of peace. Now, does that mean that we will be patrolling, or will it be a group of men that have already court findings in law? And another question, who do I get in contact with, as you could say, the horse's mouth? I want to be in contact with whoever it is, because I'm asked daily, where is the Ranger program going? And I'm so thankful that everybody got this up and running, both the Tims and everybody else. Thank you so much. And another thing that I was wondering, I know it's a lot of questions. I have actually like 2-3 pages here. But it's not really
I don't
really
think we can do 2 or 3 pages. I'm so sorry. But I will ask Brad to give you an email address where you can address all of those questions too. But I can only take a couple here on the call tonight. Brad, did you want to give an email address for him, please?
Yes, Janine, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, actually, on our website, republicarmedservices.org, there's a contact page there, and any question you have, that goes right to the committee. So if you have an opportunity to get on the website there and email us, that would be great.
Okay. Now, is there somebody that I could talk to, the horse's mouth, a phone number or whatnot? Because we've been working on this for a while in Wisconsin, and
Well, you know what? Shoot me. You know, go on the contact page. Specify your questions. It goes to me. We can coordinate calling and talking further.
Great. Now, with those first questions I just asked, did I get that across clear? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm kind of jittery because I'm kind of nervous. But
we could talk offline, and I'll address those questions for you.
But you have posed them, Daniel. So let's do this.
Excuse me. This is Secretary Pledger. May I say something briefly?
Perfect.
Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Yes. Daniel, is good to meet you, and I'm thankful that things have been working out so wonderfully for you with your situation there in Wisconsin. But something, you are correct, we are not a police force in the sense, typical sense, that we are accustomed to. And I'm saying we, American Rangers. But on the other hand, until the American Rangers, the legislation is in place in nation and in state, there is no such office. There is no such officer. And that's one of the things I was frustrated about regarding the press release that I had intended to go out some time ago that hasn't been out. I was trying to deal with that topic. We need to be careful. We're all learning. And the American Ranger is, I believe, something that is needed. I think it's an honorable concept and an honorable pursuit. But we need to make sure that we're not going around being Rangers and exercising powers of office when our office has not yet been created.
Right.
So just keep that in mind, and if you're going to have Rangers in a state, make sure the state has legislation creating those offices. And if you're operating as an officer of the state in Ranger capacity, but the office has not been created, you are operating ultra vires without authority of law, so you would need to revert to just being the people.
That's exactly how
citizens arrest.
Wow.
Well, thank you, Tim, for that.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Brad, did
Robert,
you have a question from the floor, from your committee, or do you want to go to the queue
again? Let's start to see if there's anybody from the committee that hasn't asked a question. Anybody that want to chime in on a question?
Yeah, this is Brian from Kansas.
Yes, Brian.
Yeah, I know that Bob Lord kind of mentioned this a little bit, but I do have a question. As we're standing this up and say, you know, everything goes through Congress and the Ranger program is put in place, and there's 60,000 officers, so to speak, across the nation, Fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, do you see as the state starts standing up their own ranger program, if that's what they choose to do, or militia groups and things of that nature, do you see a need possibly to where the staff may need to go down in size accordingly? Do you see it going up in size as we get more population coming in? Where do you see the progression from this starting point to fast forward, you know, 10, 15, 20 years? I yield.
Secretary Pledger, may I answer that?
Yes, please, Tim.
Yes. I think that is up to the people. And what we have here is a very dynamic situation. We cannot guess what we're going to be faced with 10 or 20 years from now, or even 5 years from now. But we have a need now. We need to make sure that we meet that need, that the security matters are taken care of for the people in this important and very critical and even dangerous transitional phase. And if we need less rangers at the general level, then that can be scaled back and should be scaled back. The ranger program, the way the legislation is written, allows for either expansion or contraction. And I hope that will answer your question, but it depends on the needs of the people and what the people's will is, and they have authorized Congress to make those decisions.
All right, Janine, who do we have next in the queue?
Next caller is Gary Hilbert, 610 area code. Go ahead, you have the floor.
Hello?
We can hear you.
This is Representative Hilbert from Pennsylvania. I'm also on the Armed Services Committee. And number one, under Article 1, Section 8, it says that that Congress has the right to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. So I don't see any reason that we can't be setting up the Rangers. In regards to something somebody else said about having the Rangers in reserve and call them when there's an emergency, you'd never get them moving fast enough in order to get them to take control of a situation. And I yield the floor.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and take another caller from the queue. And Dennis Spencer, I believe you're from Colorado.
Yes, great state, colorful state of Colorado. My name is Dennis Spencer. I'm the Speaker of the House in Colorado. We're actually creating our Constitution, and we're almost through the second reading of it. But I'd like to address the constitutionality of the Ranger program. Hopefully I can get this to rest. By the way, my background is that I started the militia movement back in the 90s in Texas, me and another guy. And we got 2,000 strong in like 3 months. So it was really good. So I studied this in detail. Now, on Article 1, Section 8, it does say to provide for organizing army and disciplining the militia for the governing of such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively. So they kept the power to the states at that point, and then the appointment of officers and the authority of training of the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Now, but if you go to the executive, and this is where we go into to the Ranger program, under Article 2, Section 2, the president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army, of the Navy, of the United States, and the militia of the several states. When called out into the actual service of the United States, he may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, the president has the ability to call out the militia of the several states. And that's where I see we could put that into the Ranger program, because it's going to have some kind of organization in there. I agree with Robert Gardner about this is the organizing when the militia is called out, all right? So I would suggest that we would put at the very beginning of this that in the event of the calling out of the militia, according to Article 2, Section 2 of the General Constitution, or we could say the Constitution for the United States of America, when called out in the actual service of the United States, the adoption of the American Ranger Plan shall be enacted. We can just put that at the very beginning. But again, according to the Constitution, you can only have a standing army for 2 years, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12, I think it is. So now I want to tell you what we did in Colorado, what we're doing in Colorado when we're writing our own Constitution. We made room for this to take place, but not to have the where the states are going to be defenseless. So we actually created two types of militia in Colorado. Of course, we haven't voted on this yet. We're still writing it. The first part is the Colorado the first part of the Colorado militia is going to, we actually call it the Colorado State Military. That part of the militia in Colorado can be called forth to the Ranger program, all right, when Article 2, Section 2 is enacted. But then all other able-bodied persons of Colorado Free State is the second part of the, you know, between 18 and above the age of 18. And those people will not be able to be called forth. They're not going to be as disciplined as the Colorado Free State military. So I think it is constitutional if we abide by Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution for the United States of America. And I yield.
Thank you. Brad, did you have someone from the committee floor?
Secretary, may I say something briefly?
Yes, Tim.
Okay. We need to have the very firm and certain understanding that the Rangers are not military. They are providing for some security regarding some situations that did not exist at that time, but they are doing it within the context of the authority of Congress. Now, there we've seen over the course of history that the executive department has been modified. The executive department and the authority regarding the modifications of the executive department beyond the Constitution itself goes to Congress and acts of Congress to create a department or whatever. It is certainly within the authority of Congress to create a department or an agency within the executive to meet the security needs of the people. So we need to be careful about mixing some things that aren't necessarily alike in our perception of the Constitution in connection with those things. So please understand, the American Rangers are not a standing military force. They are a security force providing for the security of the people, which goes to the welfare of the people, to secure the people themselves, their rights and other property. They are a peacekeeping presence. They're not there to be called out. They're 24/7, and there is a reserve force available if others are needed, and then they can operate cooperatively. They can cooperate with the state militias, a state military, if you want to use that term. So the mission is not a military mission, though there are some situations that are involving the security of the people that would have military-like functions, because we have a completely different situation than we had before. So I would just like for us to keep that in mind. The Rangers are not military. The Rangers are not militia, but they are there to complement wherein the militia is lacking, especially regarding interstate and international matters of security. But in saying that, should not a Ranger, American Ranger, also be available to help someone locally to secure their rights, even though it's not an international event that's going on. If an American Ranger is cruising through the state and he sees some innocent people coming under the attack of some gang, should he not have the authority, or that team of Rangers not have the authority to intervene to protect those innocent among we the people? And I would suggest yes, and that would not necessarily be military. That would be a peacekeeping presence, a protective security presence all across the land to cooperate with the local authorities. And I yield. Thank you.
Okay. Let's take another question out of the queue, if we can, Brad.
The next caller is 970 area code. Nelson is the last name, I believe. Go ahead.
Yes, correct. Thank you very much. Great roundtable. Mike, I have a comment and one question. Comment has been answered by Dennis Spencer and others, so I'll stand down on that one. My question is what is the about what kind of timetable do we have for the Rangers to be on call?
I can answer that. Right now, currently, the American Security Act is being reviewed by Congress. It will then through the House, and then it will be submitted to the Senate for review for a vote there. Then we'll be pretty close.
Okay. I yield.
Thank you.
Now you better yield. God bless. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
We have a call, a Kansas call, area code 949. Go ahead, caller. You have the floor. Kansas, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Forrest. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering, how would the Rangers secure our water?
This is Secretary Pledger. In asking that question, what water were you talking about? Are you talking about drinking water or navigable waters or what?
Yes, our drinking water. The water in our ground below Kansas and throughout the North American continent.
They would be there. Of course, we know that aquifers go across state lines, so that's another interstate thing. And there are also, we know because of the preciousness of water, that there are international concerns that have been trying to capture water rights beneath our soil and even in the air. And so the American Rangers would be there on an interstate and international basis to secure the people's rights in the water as determined by Congress.
So I guess a more direct question would be, we have corporations that are in the states who have set up business specifically to take our water from us and sell it to other nations, or sell it back to us at a great expense. That seems like an extremely high security situation. The word in Chinese for water is the same as the word for control. And I would think if we have the Rangers, I'm just thinking, water is very important. Water is life. How do we remove these foreign interests that are stealing our water currently?
Okay, that's up to the people. That's up to we the people. That's our responsibility. And we should be attentive to what our representatives and senators are doing in Congress and making sure that the legislation is in place to
preserve those rights. There are, I think, thorough investigation would discover that there are corporations that are operating without due authority, and then we would need to curtail those activities, and the American Rangers would be the muscle that we would need to enforce the rights of the people. So it goes to the people, their representatives and senators in Congress, and then a lawful application of the will of the people and enforcement by this peacekeeping force, and that we the people cannot have peace, we cannot be secure if our water is being stolen, if our water is being taken away through fraud. And so part of the American Ranger mission would go to that, but it's going to be the people and it's going to be Congress establishing the lawful procedure, the boundaries, and that type of thing. And then the American Rangers would be expected to uphold the law and keep the peace, securing, in this instance, the water belonging to we the people and necessary to their lives, their very lives, and their pursuit of happiness. And other rights that are mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, and also guarded by the Constitution as amended 1791 and upheld by Scripture. I yield.
Very good.
Thank
you. Brad, do you want to take another one from your committee?
Sure. Is there another committee member who hasn't had an opportunity to ask a question that has a question?
Hello, Brad.
Art, I'm sorry. I just wanted to, Brad, let you know that Art Van Alstyne is in the queue, and I know he's on your committee.
Oh, can we have Art? Art, go ahead.
I just have to get down to the bottom to unmute him. Go ahead with your other question, and I'll find Art.
Okay. There was another person chimed in.
Hello, Brad.
Yes.
Hey, this is Paul.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paul from Georgia.
Yes, sir. I am also on the infrastructure committee and also will be subbing the chair on the water. So that will be something that I will take that to the infrastructure on the transportation department and discuss that and take care of that situation.
Thank you, Paul.
On the water.
Any other questions from the committee regarding the Ranger Program, American Security Act?
This is Art. I don't know if I'm on or not.
You're on. Go ahead, Art.
Well, you know, it sounds like here we have to look at pretty much what we already have. We know that what we already have is corrupt. I think what we have to do is that we're going to have to eliminate the corruption and then make the city rangers, the county rangers, the state rangers, and the national rangers all for we the people, by the people, and for the people. I think we can discuss this till kingdom come on what we're talking about tonight, but there are systems in place already. It's corrupt. It's got to be changed. It can't be fixed in its present state, but it can be changed. And I think that this is what the Founding Fathers founded in the first place. Why do we have county rangers? Well, we have county rangers because it's too far away out from the city. We've got 100 and some miles here just in Clackamas County that things happen.
And Art, you're in Oregon, correct?
Why do we have city rangers? That's where the people are. They're concentrated. More problems are created. So I don't know what you want to call all of that. It all sounds like the same thing with the exception of the military, which fights a war. And I agree with the fact the military should be separate. But I also believe that those military should be our backup in the event of disaster. I think that we're far afield here from what we really need to be talking about. We just have to do what the Founding Fathers started out to do and do it right. No corruption. And I yield.
And Art, you're in Oregon?
Yes.
Correct? Okay, I just want to announce that. I'll leave it back to the queue. Robert or Janine, do you have a
all right.
somebody waiting in the queue?
I recognize one name here. Is this off the President's Cabinet? We've got the Secretary of the UN, Jim Fitzgerald.
Okay, great. Good evening. I wanted to throw out some statistical information for an analysis. I mean, the people's question on water and concerns of militia or military type things versus peacekeeping, as Secretary Pledger points out, are things to keep separate and distinct. And I think Secretary Pledger articulately went over that. And I would disagree with one statement that what we're doing is something new. If the marshals are out there and have been since the time of George Washington, all we're doing really is changing a name and giving our re-inhabited republic by an act to do similar things for the benefit of the people and security. And I would point out statistically, I did an analysis here a while back. U.S. government has 5 million, over 5,300,000 employees, some of which are corrupt judges and court system, and some of which are corrupt FBI, CIA, and all those things the Art just said a minute ago are corrupt, and he's absolutely right. And the that's just government employees, a lot of which are court systems that's supposed to be the justice side of things that's just as bent and broken as the congressmen and so forth that are violating the people's rights on a daily basis. On the law enforcement side, the U.S. corporate law enforcement, all municipalities, has 800,000 strong. Law enforcement at a federal level is over 140,000 more, so for a total of roughly 950,000 law enforcement officers of various types, sheriffs, police forces, all of those things, bailiffs, all that stuff. In fact, the bailiffs probably isn't in that. That's up in the government employees because they're appointed by judges, which is a problem, I think. But so the Ranger program, as I understand it, is pretty robust, and it sounds big at 60,000. But at this place, at this point in time, I don't think the republic will succeed without that, because we kind of think that we're re-inhabiting the republic and we forget about this formidable monster out there. If they collapse tomorrow, we don't have a crystal ball with how we would take over. The president has articulated in the past, hopefully we just walk in and a bunch of people have new bosses and we really got to step to the plate. And he's always said for the last 2 years that this thing, if they collapse, and while we're running parallel, is going to take 10 years to turn around. So if you just look at the law enforcement, and we put together a robust plan of Rangers, 60,000 strong or more, and get it going for the protection of the people interstate, they're not going to be so much, hopefully if like Colorado gets something up and running, that's great. Where there, I would suggest at a national level, we can get up running much more efficiently and with much more organization with that structure than the individual states might get up and running. And that's to a benefit to the people. So, because there's equipment and there's training. And I know that one of the things that I heard Governor Shahan and Secretary Pledger talking about, they're going to be trained for, I don't know if it's 2 weeks, a month, or whatever, on nothing more than the Constitution. That's something that all those 940,000 enforcement officers right now don't even know. And so as we draw in people, and some of these people may come from disgruntled or law enforcement, whether they're police, FBI, or whatever, that do believe in this country but know something is wrong. I can think of two of them right now, that one in Los Angeles and one in Hawaii, that quit their jobs because they brought up words like the Constitution and realized this. So as we get up and running, we got to remember that our Rangers are not so much protecting the small growth of the republic.
They're there to protect it against this formidable monster that includes 5,300 corrupt people that Art talked about and another 940,000 law enforcement officers that don't even honor their oath to their Constitution to protect the people's rights. So I truly believe that, you know, think about the statistics. We're going to be protecting the people against de facto, and a lot of those rangers are going to be training and talking to law enforcement officers that are their counterparts to say, hey, we're here in peace. Let us tell you about something, you know, called the Constitution. That's what we're about, and we'll probably get – there'll be trainers as well and ambassadors of goodwill over to the, those folks and give them a change of heart, and probably some of them will join yield.
Thank you, Jim. Brad, did you want to take any comments, or did you want to take a call, a question from the floor?
Sure. I'll throw it out that any other committee member hasn't had an opportunity to ask a question. Please step up.
Can you hear me, Brad? This is Tim, Representative Kemper.
Hey, how you doing, Tim Kemper? What state are you from?
Kansas.
Kansas. Thank you, Tim.
Kansas Free State. Yes. The impression I got going through the documents and stuff for the Ranger program, we're looking at something at an elite force here. I mean, you know, spit, shine, polish, cutting edge for the Republic. As far as the state level, what our goal is to have a program here in Kansas for the Rangers. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be a way, you know, as far as the trainers for national, as far as a physical fitness program and, you know, marksmanship training and stuff like that, that can be handed down to us so we can get our rangers, you know, at the county level or the state level, so we can train them. And I yield the floor.
Thank you, Ken.
Brad, this is Kerry. I'd like to answer that, please.
Please, Kerry.
Yes, what we've instituted in there, sir, is will be available to any of the states. Any of the trainers that is brought into the Ranger program, they can be used also to help train the state on whatever program that they set up. There'll be many things that's what we're all here together. We're all here to help and do what is needed for the people, and we don't need to lose sight of that. That's, like I said, and Mr. Pledger made comments about that. We're not turf. In other words, we don't need to get into this turf war business that this state or that state or the national or the general or whatever. We don't need to do that. We need to continue with the mindset that we are here for the people to protect them, to preserve the rights, and one of the things like the man brought up about water. That's things that Congress has to look at. There's committees already looking at that. But also, you need to understand something. There's private ownership of water out here, which is a private property ownership. That needs to be protected. As it says, that to protect against the people of the Republic of life, liberty, and property. And I yield. Thank you.
Thank you, Kerry. We're back to the queue. Go ahead, Robert.
We have Governor Libby from Arkansas.
Go ahead, Governor.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, fine.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I've been doing some research over here on the U.S. Marshal. It just so happens Fort Smith has a museum on the U.S. Marshals, and I've been looking into it and trying to see the difference between it and the militias, and I've kind of come up in my mind that kind of like some of them have said, that the sheriff's department and the militia and, you know, and all of them are under the executive branch, and U.S. Marshals under the judicial. But they filmed the movie True Grit down in Fort Smith. And the thing that the U.S. Marshals did was they went out as posses to bring in the bad guys so that they could be brought before the judges. And to me, the militia actually do something totally different. They're actually there in the local communities with the sheriff to protect the families in the community. And the reason I feel very strongly about that is because when the wars went on with the Native Americans, the brave men went out to fight the battle, and they left the women and children in the camps. And white men came and took the women and children and took them east while the men were out fighting the battle. And it's my vision that the militia of Arkansas, if there's ever a disaster or whatever, that they would surround the camps of the women and children, because that, my dear friends, is your wealth. That is your life. That is your genealogy. That is who we are. It don't matter how much gold you protect, but if you don't protect a woman and her children, you have lost your heritage. And to me, there's two different things going on here, and I'd like to see the Rangers be able to, the men, take whichever side they want to go to protect and serve and do it with dignity and honor. And one is in state and one's interstate. And if I'd like for you guys to watch that movie, True Grit. It's really very exciting to watch. I yield the floor.
Thank you so much, Governor. We'll go back to the committee and see if there's another question from the committee. Any committee members have a question?
This is Bob.
Yes, Bob.
I'd like to respond to what the governor just said, because she brought up some legitimate points. And I think primarily the differentiation between the National Rangers and the State Rangers. And there needs to be a differentiation made here. The marshals that were established under George Washington were what we would call primarily the marshals of today, as far as their jurisdiction went, although it's gone a little bit hog wild too, of course. But they were constricted to federal issues, or issues of the general government and enforcement on that level. And they were not so much interested in the state affairs, as the governor just laid out, nor were they under state authority. They were under federal authority, because that was their duty. Now, in light of that and what she brought out, I'd like to make a point that all those that are interested in state militias and or state rangers might want to keep in mind that once this bill is passed and the money goes and the power goes to the national government to put their plan in action and recruit, they're going to recruit the best talent from your state into the National Rangers, the way I see the act is established now. So you'll be left with whatever is still there to establish your State Rangers program. Not only that, but you will have little funding to promote your program, or to try to bring it back to where you would want it to be, and that is a strict division between the two. Well, and in the worst of circumstances, I'll admit, the national or the federal government is likely to become, over time, will have all the resources it needs to hold on to the power that has been given. And that brings me back to my main point. Why do we want to give power up to the federal level when it can be kept at the state and local level? What is the reason to do that beyond the fact that there's no constitutional basis? And I'll argue against Article 1, Section 8, or Article 2, Section 2, being adequate to justify this act, because they really aren't. This is a horse of a different color. And also, as far as this bill being there being a turf war over this bill, that's not a fear or a valid point really to bring up, because the turf war over the between federalism and republicanism is as old as our history is, and that's a turf war that will be fought over this bill as well. Finally, I ask, why reinvent the wheel? We have a perfectly good wheel and tire already established in the Constitution. All we need to do is pump air back into it. We have a Marshall's Plan program. that's established. That's useful for the purposes that it needs to be used for. We have state militias that need to be brought up to speed to keep that sort of, if you want to call it that, a security force within the states, and not to have them taken out of the states or put underneath an authority that is above the level that needs to be. State authority is adequate, even if there needs to be a state secretarial position appointed to cover the duties if it's if someone fears it's going to be too much for the governor to handle. So this has been a very good discussion, and I can find all kinds of arguments, not against the bill, but against the power being appropriated to the national level government, when everything can be done quite well under the constitutionally and without giving away any of the sovereignty of the people or of the states. Because even if Republic Congress is lobbied to be accountable on everything that is done, that still is not the best scenario. The best scenario is if it never has to go up to that level and the power remains in the hands of the people in the state. That's direct control. That's the direct republicanism in action. And it's less apt to be corrupt. It's more decentralized, and I've gone on quite a rant here, haven't I? I think it needs to be, there's a lot of things that need to be examined. I yield the floor.
Mr. Chairman, we have a question from South Carolina in the galley. You want to take it?
Yes, please.
Go ahead, from South Carolina.
Yates, ever since we started this, there's been people who have complained about giving too much power to the national government. And I'd like to remind everybody on this call that the national government wouldn't have any powers if the local and state governments and the de facto weren't allowing them to have it, because they've abandoned their duty to protect the rights of the people. And another point I'd like to bring out is when we signed the Declaration of Sovereign Rights, a lot of people were worried about their privacy and didn't want the de facto to have those documents. Well, guess what? We didn't put the de facto on notice, so we're still under their jurisdiction because we haven't made our declaration public and stuck to it by our behavior. I yield the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Ready for another caller in the queue? Is that all right, Brad? We do have quite a few more.
Please.
Okay, great. I have a 970 area code. I believe it's Indiana. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Yes, this is Bob Barnett, Colorado Senate. I was concerned earlier in the call. Secretary Pledger actually handled it very well. It was sounding real military. Probability, most likely, is just the names being used. I think it'd be very helpful to get off of the. He talked about airborne rangers. That's very distinct, aggressive, finite assault troops that are in the U.S. Army. That's not what we're talking about here. And I think some of the name issues could be modified a little bit when we talk about that and special forces, because that's not, in fact, what Secretary Pledger explained in the clarification. I think he took care of that well. I also think it's necessary for people to understand that militia is pure defense, absolute and pure defense. The citizens fall out in the street and go to war, to whatever they have to do to defend. We're used to sending National Guards overseas, and that's improper use. And some of those clarifications are all I wanted to ensure, because the more I listen, the more clear it becomes that the act is aimed at law enforcement issues, similar to Ranger, or not Ranger, similar to Marshal Service, or maybe Texas Rangers historically, and not assault troops like airborne rangers, i.e. Military U.S. Army. So a lot of it was taken care of by Secretary Pleasure's definition, and I think boils down to just maybe some name adjustments. I yield. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The next caller in the queue, I'm sorry, is James Richmond, 541 area code. I believe that's Oregon.
Hi, Janine. This is Carl.
Hi, Carl.
How are you this evening and everybody?
Doing well. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is more toward training. I've been to my assembly meeting a few times. I've talked with my sister in New Mexico, and she's been. And the ages of most of the people, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore. And as young as our republic is, I mean, will there be a place for the older people to become trainers for the Rangers as well as participating in the program? Because we're not going to be, you know, physically fit because we're not that young anymore. So are you going to have a program to train trainers?
Yeah, Secretary Kendra, may I address that?
Yes, please.
We are going to make exceptions regarding physical requirements for those people who have expertise valuable to training the Rangers and bringing them up to speed for mission performance. It was mentioned earlier something about elite force, and that's our desire, is to make their Rangers an elite force. And we value the skills, the expertise, the knowledge, the wisdom that we have in men and women who are not perhaps physically able to do other functions involved in serving as a ranger. So, yes, that has already been taken into consideration, and we will embrace everyone who can help forward the security of the American people, and those who can't perform on the line can perform in training situations. We will certainly want to include them where we can. I yield. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Our next question. Are we ready to go to the next question, Brad?
Yes, please.
All right, from Virginia.
Yes, this is Joe Orlando, Virginia. I wanted to ask, you know, as a matter of fact, I came on cue almost 45 minutes ago. My question has become more complicated since I got on cue. We're talking about defending ourselves through the Rangers from the corrupt monster that's been created in the de facto, but we're mostly talking about those individuals who are in the public eye, or at least that's the way I hear it being said, who are the individuals who are more or less puppets. And even within that corruption, there are rogue groups doing things even outside the de facto's knowledge. But the people who are the individuals who are going to be affected most, if politicians are bought in de facto, they're being bought because someone gains even more than the politicians themselves. And these are pure criminals. One of the things, I mean, just one over probably hundreds, is a weapons grade virus, you know, biological weapons that are being held in more than 200 level 2 security situations that should be in level 4 security situations. How do we protect ourselves against rogue groups and pure criminals who are really the benefactors of all this deceit? How do we protect ourselves from these people striking back with a vengeance? Because when the Republic moves into place to govern this great land, these people, they're the ones whose throats we cut. They will no longer be able to get their massive profits through the politicians that exist. How do we deal with that? I yield.
Thanks, sir. Anybody, Kerry, Tim?
Yeah, Brad, this is Kerry. I'll answer that. There is some devastating things out here. I agree with the man that just spoke. I didn't catch his name. I'm sorry, but anyway,
what
he just said is very, very viable. But we have to meet a lot of times force with force. So that's the reason in the need of setting up a force that is well trained and that can we can attempt to protect the people of the Republic, because there is great forces out here. Another force that I would like to bring up that goes right along with what he's saying is there's people out here that have germ warfare and viruses and all kinds of things that we'll have to contend with. But also, you better understand that the gangs across this nation are well organized. They're also well armed. Those people are going to go and come after the innocent people, and we're taught by Scripture that government is to only have two jobs, one to be a terror to evil and protect the innocent. And I yield on that.
Okay, well, if I may, I'm sorry, may I have the floor again?
Yes, please.
Joseph, go ahead. I just wanted to say one thing. The president and I have had the benefit of meeting with the military at various levels. My particular background has to do with those particular installations that you're talking about, and that is one of the pleas that the president has made to the military when things get changed around, is those very facilities that you have, the politicians have actually cut their funding and don't allow them to take care of those properly. So I just needed you to know that the president has looked into and is planning on empowering the military to take care of those very situations, sir. I yield.
I understand. And so we have anticipated this lashback. But how about the criminal element itself? I mean, these people are not likely to just step down and say, whoops, the game's over. What do we have in place to counteract acts by just sheer criminals that are out there raping, pillaging, and whatever?
Absolutely.
Mr. President, they're doing it now.
Mr. President, do you happen to be on here still? The president has had situations where he's been involved in those things. Mr. President, are you still on here?
He had to step out for a minute. This is Secretary Pledger. But,
oh, well, you've been in those situations with him. Go ahead and address that, Tim, please.
Okay, we're American Rangers is part of the solution for the problem and the threat to the security of the people that you're bringing up. This backlash from rogue agents, also backlash from criminal elements, that type of thing. They're not going to give up their turf and so what we have involved with the American Ranger program, we have to have sharing of intelligence. So the American Rangers are going to be involved in sharing intelligence, both giving and receiving. And it's one reason why we talk about the American Rangers being elite, and talk about airborne Rangers, talk about special forces. Generally speaking, the American Ranger is not going to be a special forces operation, but the plan is to have the concept involves units with special forces type training, equipping, and ability. So we may need to do airdrops. Therefore, we have airborne Rangers. We need to mobilize Rangers from one region or several states and bring them into another state or region because of the particular threat there, what's being dealt with. So they're not military. They are a peacekeeping force and a security force to keep the people secure. And the best that we can do, if the people by Congress so desire to create the American Ranger agency to operate as their agents, the American Rangers are agents of the people, their agents to help secure them, provide for their own security, then there are things being taken into the American Ranger concept and the sharing of intelligence and the cooperation with military and other agencies, some international agencies to counter and obviate the types of threats that you're bringing up. It's likely that we will probably not be 100% successful, but if we don't have the peacekeeping force in place, highly trained with teams that are highly trained and skilled and ready to go in and perform the necessary operations on our own soil, then we're going to have a much greater loss of life than we would otherwise, and loss of property. So what you're bringing up is very important. I didn't really want to get into that, but since you brought it up, this is an extreme type scenario that we're looking at. And if we don't have the forces in place to deal with those things, even on our own soil, then the people are much more vulnerable, they're less secure, and that's something that the American Securities Act and the American Ranger Program is seeking to address. I yield. I hope I answered it sufficiently for now.
Yeah, I agree with the importance of the Ranger Program. What I don't understand is that as the de facto collapses, since it's not, probably not going to be an overnight thing, where anyone with a grudge is going to start unleashing whatever. But if it collapses gradually, there is still going to be a possibility of this backlash. So if you have 200 labs that have all kinds of weapon grades, biological agents that you only need a card swipe to enter into because they're not level 4 security, how... You know, we're talking about airborne Ebola. If that's released, and as a matter of fact, the study done on it was that there's a 70% chance it'll accidentally be released. But if that is released in any one of 200 labs, how do we even propose to prevent that from happening?
Well, the only thing I can say to that is that's going to depend on intelligence and, reports that we get from the intelligence community and our gathering of intelligence also. And I don't have a complete solution to that. And I don't know of anyone in Republic who has a complete solution to that. But I'm glad that you've brought it up on this.
We just left lost Secretary Pledger. I hope he's able to come back. Carrie, are you able to pick up and
exactly. Yeah, on that, like I said, there's lots of intelligence that'll have to be passed back and forth. And the one ultimate thing is that we will always, it doesn't matter how great a force of Rangers we put together if Congress approves it. It doesn't matter what great a force of military we have. Doesn't matter how many planes, boots on the ground, ships at sea. If we don't address our Creator, our Father in Heaven, for our protection, we have none. So we always have to go back and rely on His protection, and we do what we can the best we can. And that's the best way I know how to answer that.
Agreed. Thank you. I yield.
Brad, did you want to take a question from the...
Yeah. Let me check and see committee members. Any questions on our side?
Yeah, this is Art again. They just said I was on. So.
Go ahead, Art.
I think we have to remember here that our waterways and our riverways have been vulnerable ever since the time began, practically. And I think what the man just said about trusting in the Lord to protect us is what we have to do. You can't be everywhere at once. Only God can do that. So I think that the other thing that we have to look at is we can't look at the de facto as 100% of them being bad guys. There's a lot of guys out there that are just as dumb as we were 2, 3, 4 years ago. So there's a lot of people out there that would do things right if they just had the opportunity. I think most of these policemen would like to be good cops if they could. So I think this is what we have to look at. Have some trust in the people that are there. And I go back to what Tim Turner said probably 2 years ago when he was asked a question, what are all these people going to do when the economy collapses? And he said they're going to get up the next morning and put their pants on and go back to work just like they did before. But that's what's going to happen. There's people there that are going to pick up the slack. There'll be people that'll be out of work. There'll be people that'll go back to work. So there, and we will be able to, through the Lord, be able to roll with those punches and do it right. And that's what we're trying to do. So God bless us all that we get it done soon. I yield.
Absolutely, Art.
Thank you. And I wanted to say that Security Chief Tim Pledger is back on the line. Did you want to finish your answer, Tim?
Oh, I just heard the last few sentences, and that was a good wrap-up. Right now, we don't have the infrastructure to prevent everything, but we do trust in our Creator, and with His help, we can do what needs to be done.
Right.
And the threat is real, and that's why we're laboring so feverishly and diligently to implement security measures for the people, and I yield. Thank you.
We have three more calls in the queue, but Brad, really, I'd like to defer to you to wrap it up as a committee call, so lead it any way that you want.
I'd like to get the three, if we could, in the queue.
Okay. So the next is from Colorado.
Go ahead, caller.
Robert.
Yes.
Robert, this is Jim Carpenter, Lieutenant Governor of Colorado.
Hi, Jim.
How are you? Hi, Robert. How are you doing tonight?
Very well. Excellent discussion.
It is. You know, as a Lieutenant Governor, I appreciate the responsibility that's placed upon the executive branch. And I would hate to knowingly encourage ourselves because of emotion not to prepare adequately, because then I put myself and everything that the people of the state of Colorado are at risk. I feel like that no one can envision what kind of turmoil we're going to be facing in the coming months. Only a fool would tie our hands so that we could not adequately do what it takes to do with our reliance firmly in our Lord. And so I just encourage everybody to take this not on an emotional level, but strictly a logical level. And with prayer and guidance from our Lord, we'll make it through. I yield.
Thank you, Jim. Absolutely
well,
true.
Just to add to that, Lieutenant Governor, as a committee, we have that focal point that you just mentioned, and we're keeping that balance.
Thank you. The next caller is Rowdy Templer from Iowa. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And, you know, I'm proud to serve on this committee with Brad and the gentleman from Oregon, Art and Bob and others. And we take seriously our work on behalf of the people. I think it should be noted, too, that our president who's been on this call, Tim Pledger, is Secretary of Security, and Governor Terry Sheehan exhibit some of the best qualities of leadership that I've ever observed in my lifetime. Certainly things you just do not see in anywhere in de facto. These people respect the security of the people. They're concerned with their security. They're concerned that their constitutional rights are protected. They recognize that we are the sovereigns, not the governments, not the state governments either. It is the people. And that this protection that would be offered by the American Rangers is for the people. And I understand that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, that the American Rangers will be answerable to the people. So that if, and because they do take an oath to the Constitution and they do take training and preparation so that their minds are right, you might say, from Cool Hand Luke, their minds are right when it comes to the people that they're sworn to protect and defend, that they're answerable for their actions, as are we all. There's no limited liability. And so I think the efforts being made to provide the people security through the Ranger program, I think there's going to be good results, great results for the people of all the states. And those Rangers will be answerable for their actions, and it happens right at the state level where the actions take place. And if you can correct me if I'm wrong, I know their actions are reviewed by within their own organization, in the Rangers organization, but ultimately, where their actions take place, where there's any question, it'll be reviewed right there at the state or local level. Is that right?
Tim or Terry, can you answer that?
I'm sorry, this is Kerry. I was I had to take another call right quick a second. I missed that last part.
I'll be very brief, Kerry, and recap real brief. The this whole concern over power going to the national. Correct me if I'm wrong. I do not see power going to the national. I see an organization of national rangers that are there to protect the people, ultimately serving the people, and it's the people that are empowered. And in fact, if the Rangers violate their oath and go against their own code, they'll very quickly be answerable to the people right in the local area where they've been serving, and as well as to the Ranger hierarchy. Am I right?
Absolutely, sir. You're exactly right.
So this power is not a power for the national government. It is really the security of the people. And I want to assert again in your hearing, and you're a governor, that the governments are, or the governed, the states are not sovereign. It is the people. The states have standing because the people give them that authority, and therefore they have standing as with the national government. Is that how you see it, sir?
Absolutely, sir. As a matter of fact, on that point that you're making, is under the 10th Amendment that's been brought out,
That's the very reason the last sentence says that are reserved to the states respectfully. If you go look up that word, that means in turn, and that's the reason the phrase was added, or to the people. The people are the ones that are sovereign. No state is sovereign.
Thank you. And in fact, the power originates with the people. So the people, when it comes to individual choice at the, within the states, the people have the individual choice. This came up in a meeting in our state, and I'm not trying to tell tales, but ultimately the Affidavit of Sovereign Rights, there was a question by some that they thought they should have a state document. I advocated that I have the right as an individual. The 10th Amendment gives me the right to choose. If I want to use that document, no one can prevent me from using that document, just like no one can prevent me from praying to Almighty God Jehovah if that is my choice, or carry a gun if that is my choice. It is my constitutional right that is derived from Almighty God. And if you want to add to that, I yield.
I have nothing to add. That's said just right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
our
you, Robbie.
Final, Brad, our final caller in the queue is from Missouri. Drew
Mississippi.
Rainer.
Mississippi.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. Good evening,
yeah,
Drew.
My crooked letter, I out by compact.
That's right.
This is Drew Rainer, governor of Mississippi. And I want to say that it's obvious that a great deal of thought had gone into this this program, as was done when I was immediate part of it, when it initially got started. And my only question is, I'm a little concerned about why do you feel there's a need to have what amounts to 1,200 national rangers, basically, in each state, because 60,000 divided by 50 would be 1,200 in each of the states. And so that's what my concern is and my question is. And with that, I yield.
Well, thank you. Carrie, can you answer that?
Sure. Drew, glad to hear from you. That question was brought up. 1,200 in each state is just the overall that was talked about. I don't think that we're going to have 1,200 right off the bat, but that was set the goal so that we could make sure that there was enough forces, because we're walking into the unknown, Drew, just like what me and you have talked about in times past. The unknown is just that, it's unknown. You don't know what you're going to encounter. You don't know what you're going to have. And when you say 1,200, are you saying that's too many or not enough?
Well, I would think that's too many, but the states themselves should step up, which is planned here in Mississippi, step up to put their own ranger force in internally. And so I would think 1,200, I know it won't be divided up equally, 1,200 in each one of the states, but if they step up to do their own internal security, if you want to use that word, then there wouldn't be any need for 1,200 national rangers in each state.
And that's like I said, in the plan, it's built in that could be reduced or maybe never met if we see the states do step up and the states, and there's not needed that big a force on the ranger program.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Very good. So, Janine, we're going to close the question and answer queue. And, Brad, the Speaker of the House is on the call. So,
welcome, Mark. Do you have a question or comments?
Well, the only thing was I was thinking about the initial question that was brought up regarding the constitutional authority for being the ranger program. And in the Article 1, Section 8, it does say that Congress has the ability to provide for the defense and general welfare. And I know the comment was made that argument could be used for unconstitutional things or bad things as well. And I still think that is a viable constitutional authority for perhaps what they used creating the Marshall Program and so forth. And I think the ultimate test then of whether or not a program or a law is acceptable under that clause would be from the people. The people will then step up and decide if, let's say, the Ranger program gets put into place based upon that authority in the Constitution. The people will step up and say, we appreciate this Ranger program. It is protecting our rights. We like it. And they will keep it in place. If they don't like it, if the Ranger program gets out of hand or doesn't have a is not benefiting the people, then the people, it's the people's responsibility and their right to step up then and make the assertion to the Congress, to their voice, that they don't want this, that this wasn't a good program, wasn't a good idea, and then they can come back and change it or get rid of it. So I think whenever there's a nebulous or a questionable area there, which this could be, in other words, it's not explicit in the Constitution, you're inferring it from a section of the Constitution, the ultimate test of that comes from whether or not it benefits the people, and the people are the ones that decide that. And so I think that's where it will ultimately be decided after the program is passed.
So Speaker Lounsbury and Brad, to give perspective to those who are on the call, on the roundtable call, where does this go? This has been an open forum that's given us a view into how Congress does its business. How will this move from this subcommittee to the halls of Congress? Can you kind of walk us through that process?
Well, just to clarify, we're not a subcommittee. We're actually the committee, the main committee, Armed Services. But I don't know, Mark, do you want to explain how that path works?
Yes, the act was brought to my desk from the Secretary Pledger, and then I submitted it to the Congress, to the committee for review and input, and then the committee will come to a point where they will make any modifications or changes that they think need to be made and have it brought to a place where it's ready to be brought to the floor for discussion. And then they will submit that to me, and we'll bring it to the floor for discussion. It will probably, at this point, end up being a joint resolution. So the Senate will also be involved on their side in their committee in reviewing it, and there will be a joint then resolution between the Senate and the House brought to myself to be brought to the floor. And a joint session of Congress with the House and the Senate. Then there will probably be some discussion there and perhaps opportunity for some input. Then once there's enough time for discussion and digesting of it, it will be brought to a vote.
So then the folks in the Republic who, of course, they've been on this call and will have heard and have heard a lot of the discussion, where do they direct their comments? Do they direct it to their state representative, or is there a forum from either the committee or at a House level that they can direct comments to?
As Brad stated, they do have a website. They do have emails. The Congress has emails. You can send it to that committee directly. You can send it to myself, to the speaker, and that can be forwarded on to the committee. However, I recommend that you bring your requests and your input directly to your representatives and your senators. That involves them in the process. That keeps that flow of information back and forth through the proper channels and keeps everybody accountable and involved rather than just going bypassing your local reps and they may not even know what's going on. Involve them. Make sure they know what's going on. And if they have input from you that they need to get, then they know they need to send it to me or send it to the committee and make those comments. They can also make comments on the floor when it comes to the floor. So that would be my recommendation, is working through your local representatives and senators to involve them to make sure that they're involved in the process.
Excellent.
Accountable.
Excellent. Well, Brad, do you have any closing, winding up the call or the committee's business here before we I was going to rope in either a governor or a speaker to close us in prayer.
I don't. I just want to thank everybody for getting on the call, and it was a great discourse, and look forward to maybe doing more of things like this, maybe other committees if possible. You have the floor.
Anyone else have closing comments they'd like to make? Well, Speaker Lounsbury, would you do us the honor of closing us in a word of prayer?
Certainly. Father in heaven, we humbly come before you, honoring you as the Creator and the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. We call upon you for our protection. We call upon you for wisdom, for discernment, for insight as we proceed forward in all of our committees, but especially right now I ask for this committee that is reviewing the Ranger program. I ask, Father, that your insight and wisdom would be revealed through the consensus of the people, and that you would be lifted up and honored throughout the process as well, as we treat one another with respect and honor, and that we listen to one another and allow you to speak through each of us. We just do trust. We trust that you will bring out the appropriate legislation, that you will bring about what is necessary, and we trust you for that. And we trust you, as has been expressed here as well, for all of the things that we aren't prepared for and all of the things that we don't even know that we need to prepare for. We trust you for all of that. And I ask for each person on this call, Lord, that you would grant to them peace, grant to them joy, grant to them enthusiasm, and the strength to endure the trials that we will continue to go through in such a way that your glory is revealed, even in the midst of the trials, and that you would provide victory, Lord, for your name's sake. So be it.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We have a footnote comment from our producer. She would like people to email us their comments about tonight's format. Tell us if you like it. Tell us if you don't. You could Skype it with a thumbs up or thumbs down and make any comment you like. All right. Thank you all on the Armed Services Committee. We're grateful for your time and your it's been a long evening for you. Thank you, Secretary Pledger and Governor Shahan, and to all who've contributed. God bless you and good night.
From the mountains to the breath.